ring if you're ready to care. Let the podcast begin. Oh, let's talk power, let's talk speed. Hosted by the one and only We Too Deep. Turn it up loud, feel the power in your seat. This is Slappin' Neat, yeah, Slappin' Neat.
What is up, everybody? It is your boy, We Too Deep, and we are back with another episode of the Slappin' Meat Wrestling Podcast. We're doing it a day early. It's July 31st, 2025. It's also the day that your boy, We Too Deep, turns the big 2-8. And so, happy birthday to me, right? And as well, my brother, Junkier Jar James, we are, you know, twins, so we have the same birthday, you know, logically speaking. So happy birthday to him as well. It's a Thursday, so he will be doing his show tonight, so definitely tune in to that. And so with that, let's jump in. It's been a while since we about 10 days since we did an episode. So we will jump on in. We're going to have a lot to discuss on this podcast, this particular episode. We have some news, some things that have happened over the last week or so since we've done one, an episode that we want to discuss, that I want to discuss in the opening thoughts segment. We are going to predict both nights of SummerSlam, answer the questions from the Discord. We're bringing back bracket battles. And then we'll have some final thoughts. With that, let's jump right on in. We're going to start with what might be the biggest news event to happen in the world of professional wrestling. Probably, I'm just going to be honest, in the last 30 years. And that is that the man Hulk Hogan Terry Bollea, the man we know as Hulk Hogan, has passed away. It's been a week now. So I know I'm a little bit late to the party of celebrating the life of Hulk Hogan, the character, what he meant to wrestling. We're going to talk about that. But if you could join me for the next few seconds, I'm not trying to be corny. I'm not trying to be, you know, cool with this. I have a reason why I'm doing this, and I'll explain in a minute. If you could join me for the next 30 seconds or so and just be silent as we do here at the Slappin' Meat Wrestling Podcast, as we do an official 10 bell salute. Thank you. There's not much more that I could add that podcasters everywhere, whether it be Bischoff, who actually knew the guy, whether it be any wrestler who has been interviewed or been telling their story on why Hulk Hogan was important to them, whether it be the fans, people who grew up like JD from NY, who gave a very emotional episode on his YouTube channel, whether it be anyone else in the wrestling world. There's not much more I could say as to the meaning that Hulk Hogan brought to the world of professional wrestling. Take away all of the negative political stuff that Hulk Hogan, Terry Bollea did outside of the ring. We as wrestling fans need to learn to differentiate. No one's sitting here saying that the way Terry Bollea acted outside of the ring in any way, shape, or form should be condoned. But this ultimately isn't a issue of differentiating between character and actor. I don't have to continue to explain what everyone else has already said about what Hulk Hogan as a character, as a superstar on your TV, what it meant to the wrestling business. Without Hulk Hogan, there is no pro wrestling. There is no WrestleMania. There is no SummerSlam. There is no WWE. Wrestling would have died a slow, painful, smoky bar room or high school gym death. Hulk Hogan took pro wrestling from the gyms and the bingo halls to the mainstream of national television. And we as fans today get to benefit from that with the Peacock deal, with the Netflix deal that we love to complain about the prices. And let me get, I understand the prices are out of control. I get it. Like, I understand why we complain. But none of this empire known as pro wrestling, does not exist without Hulk Hogan. The character that was an American icon, Superman in real life, who told an entire generation it was cool to take your vitamins and say your prayers. That is the man we lost. We could choose, as a people, we could choose to be hateful and to hold grudges and to hold personal debts against Terry Bollea, or we can choose to learn to forgive, to understand that there's a time and a place for all of this, and to have these conversations in the day and the weeks following his death while there is a child in Nick Hogan and Brooke Hogan, a wife, family members, friends, former co-workers, people who knew him, who are mourning, who are grieving the loss of Hulk Hogan. Who are grieving the loss of what might have been the last remaining semblance of normalcy from their childhood in the 80s. The death of Hulk Hogan represents, to a lot of people in this country, the death of Americana from the 1980s when everything, the good old days, and everything felt right. Now, this doesn't take away from what Hulk Hogan has done, and we can address that. What Terry Bollea, excuse me, has done, and we can address that at a different time when the grieving process has stopped. I don't know about you, but the last thing that I want to hear or want anyone to hear at my eulogy is all the bad things that I've done. It would be terrible if while you were dead, right? If you're listening, if on the day you die, when you're having your service, and everyone and your family's grieving, everyone and your friends are grieving, and your eulogy is being read out, and all these good things, positive things that you have said, would it not be disrespectful if someone came up and said, "Well, this guy did this and this and this," and started to list all the negatives that you have done? It would be disrespectful. See, because this is ultimately a worldview issue. And that's the angle I want to take. This is an angle on worldview. You can choose to continue to hold a grudge against Terry Bollea, a man who more than likely didn't personally offend you in any way, shape, or form. Or you can choose to release all of that and forgive. Because forgiveness isn't about forgetting about crimes committed against you. Forgiveness is freeing yourself of the burden of holding that grudge. That is forgiveness. Forgiveness is more about you than it is the other person. You don't have to like Terry Bollea, but it must be so tiresome to hold grudges and a hatred to a man you, well, most of you in the IWC do not personally know. And a man that many who may have been hurt, deeply hurted from what he has said, have forgiven. See, because in my worldview is that everyone is evil by nature. That is our nature. That no one is righteous. There are no good people. Because the standard isn't human. The standard is supernatural. I don't want to get preachy. I don't want to get religious, but this is ultimately where we have to take this. Because I continually see posts about, "Oh, Hulk Hogan, Terry Bollea is burning in hell." That's mad disrespectful. It's mad disrespectful. And it's also mad inaccurate. Because, see, here's the thing. A lot of people in the IWC, what I've noticed in the IWC is a lot of the fan base are left-leaning, more liberal, atheistic, or non-religious, non-Christian people. And there's nothing wrong. If that's where you want to stay, that's where you want to stay. I'm not here to force religion down your throat, but here's what I am here to do. I'm here to explain why I personally forgive Terry Bollea. I don't forget what he's done. I understand what he did was bad, but I chose to forgive him. Here's why. Because I believe when he repented of his sin, that, by the way, we all are sinners. See, this is where worldview comes in. Every single human being that has ever walked this planet is evil. Not as evil as we can be, but I'm going to be completely honest. We all had the potential to become Hitler. That's human nature. It's human nature to hate. It's human nature to do evil things. That is our nature. But I believe that there is a way to be forgiven of that. And when Hulk Hogan turned from that sinful lifestyle and began to change his life, he was forgiven, not just by men, which he was, but by the creator God of the universe. And he's the standard. He's the one that matters. I believe whenever the day happens, whether it's the day of my death or in eternity when the world ends, which I hope happens a lot sooner than later, I believe I will see Hulk Hogan one day. And he will be glorified and perfect for eternity. Because see, that's the worldview I have, that the worst of sinners, that if Jeffrey Dahmer on his deathbed confessed and believed three words, Jesus is Lord. If that was Jeffrey Dahmer's confession on his deathbed, I believe Jeffrey Dahmer would be in heaven. Now, I don't know personally if that was his confession. I'm just saying, I believe that the worst of the worst can be forgiven because I am forgiven. And trust me, I'm no better by nature than Jeffrey Dahmer. I had that potential to become Jeffrey Dahmer. I had the potential to be that evil. Because, see, my text, my scriptures that I read, that I adhere to, state that all men do not seek after God, but rather seek to worship idols and self. And that the best works that I do, when matched to the standard of a holy, perfect God, they're no different. And in the actual original language, the context is your good works are no different than a menstrual rag. That's some dirty stuff. Your good works are not even good when compared to the standard. See, the standard's perfection, none of us reach that. So if you take anything from this podcast, and we'll get into wrestling, and I'll stop preaching here in a minute. But if you take anything from this episode, this is why it's at the beginning. If you take anything from this podcast, from this episode, it's that when you listen to me and you hear me constantly say, Terry Bollea is forgiven because, right, it's a worldview. Yes, what he did was wrong, but what his God, what his Savior did was so much better than anyone can say, and that blood covered his wrongs. So I believe I'll see Hulk Hogan one day. I may not recognize who he was in that glorified state, where there's still arguments about if we would have memories of who people are. But I'll see him one day. With that, let's talk about wrestling. Because we could go into what Hulk Hogan did for wrestling, right? And I've already covered some of that. Everyone and their mother has covered that. So we're going to talk about wrestling in a different way. And we're going to change sides here, and I'm going to do something that I don't really want to do, right? Like, if I had any other option than to have to do this, then I probably would not do this, right? But I have to do this because for the last 6 or so months, I feel like I'm being tasked by myself, but I feel like no one else is going to do it, so I'm going to do it. to expose these podcasters for the grifters that they are. Now, I don't have to do it for the bigger creators, right? We all understand that a lot of the bigger creators are doing it for money. But I'm more so talking about the people who hide their motivations as, oh, I want a kingdom, excuse me, I want a community built. I want to build a community of friends who can get together and watch wrestling, right? There are people who say that, right? But ultimately, they just want the money. They want the grift. And I have to say this, right? Over time, there is one individual creator. I have no personal beef against this dude. I used to consider him an acquaintance in the podcasting space. I don't really have friends. I have acquaintances, right? Being friends is an intimate relationship, right? I don't consider people friends. Friendship is an intimate relationship. You have to be here for me at the darkest of dark, right? I have very few people that I would call friends. I have a lot of acquaintances. Very few people that I would call friends, right? I would consider this person an acquaintance in the podcasting game. I owe a lot of my audience, honestly, to the fact that he allowed me in his Discord to promote my podcast, something that most Discords would not allow. But over the last year and a half or so, I've slowly noticed some things. And I really don't want to call them out. I don't necessarily feel like it will benefit anybody, but I'm doing this solely because I believe that everyone who listens to his product should understand what is happening. I've known this dude for 2, 3 years, right? And so before I play the clip, because what really is going to happen is I'm going to play a clip he posted in the last week or two that really is just the craziest clip that I've ever seen in my life in terms of a wrestling take. And I have to set context because a lot of people will say, well, there's some beef here. This is personal. You're trying to dick ride off of his name. And guys, I'm going to be completely honest with you. He's got about 7,000 subscribers on his YouTube. With that being said, he's got 7.7, excuse me, 7,170,000 subscribers on his YouTube, which is great. I'm not going to critique that. Guys, he in the last 2 weeks, if we'll just go back the last 2 weeks, in the last 2 weeks of content that he's posted, he has five videos and he posts a lot of videos, right? He has five of five of 20 videos. Five of 20 videos in the last 2 weeks have over 100 views. That's 100 views. Understand that 100 by 7,170, because that's what 7.17,000 is. That's not even. Or that's just over 1%. That's 1.4% of his subscriber That's 100. And he's only got that on 5 of 20 videos. Now, I don't know his TikTok. I don't follow TikTok. I'm sure that stuff is pushing, because TikTok is different than YouTube. But the YouTube, in my opinion, isn't doing well. In comparison, and I don't really push the YouTube page all that often, we got about 200 subscribers, and we get about 20 views on average within a 2-week period of time. That's 10%. Right? I'm not saying I'm better than him. I'm just saying I don't necessarily think that it would require me to use his name to grow a show. Not many people are listening. Right? With that being said, I'm doing this for a reason. I'm going to expose the take, but I need to set the context of this, right? He sent me a message 2 years to the day, July 31st, 2023. In that message, I will read parts of it. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's pretty long. Said, context of this was around the time I was, you know, go back about 2 years. I just got started really podcasting a lot. And I did a lot of episodes on Omos and stuff like that. And I did an episode with James and Cody. I don't know if it was on this channel or on their channel. Where I mentioned a person in his Discord was dumb to the product. Right? Meaning he wasn't educated to the AEW or wrestling game the way James and Cody were. We were talking about casual fans. Nothing negative about what I was saying. And so the context of this message was, hey, let's be careful what we say about mentioning other people. Let's be professional, right? And I'll admit, probably wasn't the best use of words. I'll go ahead and admit that. But the later half of the podcast said things like, or later parts of the message say things like, or the beginning of it says, first, I want to say I appreciate everything you do in the community. I think most people who are involved in the Discord would say that while we are growing slow, we are growing meticulously. My vision is a community that feels like friends shooting the shit, and that is the path we are on right now. Remember that. There are other parts here saying, that he wants to build. Right here, the very end of the message says, ultimately, I think we have a good thing growing here. We have to have some conversations at some point of branding your content and the cool stuff you do under the casual wrestling brand. Right? So this was my assumption 2 years ago. That we're building a Discord. We're building a place for friends to hang out. But ultimately, for that to happen, to shoot the shit, you have a lot. I don't know about you. This may just be me. But when I talk with my friends, we sometimes have some deep conversations. So I say all of this to set up the context. About 2 years ago, it was about the last time anything major like that happened. And that was the assumption. I was under the assumption we were growing, that I was going to be a part of what he was doing, and that he respected my opinion. I don't have that that thought anymore. I was under the assumption we were going to, sure, make a business out of it, but make wrestling the center. Well, it became very, very obvious at the beginning of this year, really since WrestleMania, that my opinion was no longer favored in his group And so I left the Discord. Now, I don't like to leave and not explain why I left. I didn't want a message saying, hey, did you leave the Discord on accident? So I went ahead and got ahead of this. And I'm going to read exactly what I said. Hey, I wanted to explain why I left the server. I didn't say anything right away because I wanted to cool off and respond with a clear head. I respect your right to run things how you want. I've always felt this, right? But over time, it's felt that my opinion, though consistent with what I've always believed, were no longer welcome. Since Mania, nearly everything I posted was treated as disruptive, controversial, or not casual enough. Which is frustrating, especially in a community that promotes itself as free speech. In reality, it felt like only certain views were acceptable, mainly the ones that matched the group's vibe. I don't mind disagreement, but I do mind being made to feel like I don't belong for sharing thoughtful, reasoned takes. Honestly, the group seems more interested in hot takes and surface level posts right now. That's fine if that's the direction, but it's not for me. The show also feels more polished and performative than real, which is ironic considering the criticism often aimed at others like SRS and the reactors. There's no personal issue here. I just didn't feel respected anymore, and that's why I stepped away. If you want to respond, that's totally fine, but this is all I have to say. I just wanted to be upfront. Signed, We2D. Right? Very normal professional message. Hey, this is why I left. This is how I feel. I don't think anything's out of pocket. Right? This gets a response. I'm not afraid to show receipts. He said this, I'll respond to this out of respect for you that I've always defended your right to be here. I'm not sure this Discord was ever promoted as free speech. We're going to pause right here. I'll continue reading. This is crazy that he would even type this and then listen to his episodes, right? He used to start every episode with, if you want a place where there's no gatekeeping from the IWC, no gatekeeping, you could say what you want, you're in the right place. That's practically saying we're promoting free speech. You can say what you want. That's how it was promoted, right? Let's go back. I'm not sure this Discord was ever promoted as free speech. This is a tool for me to grow my community of listeners who watch and promote my opinions. I have always welcomed anyone to say anything, but I have never not responded the way I responded. Over time, I have received a ton of messages from people who left the Discord because they felt that you weren't a casual fan and that you competed for attention. Every time I defended your right to be here and told them to push back against your opinions. This is crazy. Essentially being said, I'm fighting for attention. Now, let me explain the dynamic for those who are not in the Discord. For those who are not in the casual wrestling Discord. From what I've heard, I'm no longer in it, as I said. From what I've heard, it's dead. The reason that I was posting so well, I understand how online communities work. If there's no posting, if people stop posting things and the conversation dies, eventually the group will die. You have to keep notifications popping up to remind people to come to these things. At the time that I was in it, there was about 73 members and only about 5 to 8 of them were active ever. This was not like it was some active group. I wasn't fighting for attention. I was trying to keep the group entertained. And from what I've understood, not a lot of people are entertained in that group anymore. That's like 3 or 4 people talking and that's it. That's not an active community, by the way. So I wasn't competing for attention. I was just trying to create conversation. Again, that's what I thought we were doing. He said, in the last couple of weeks, it was brought to my attention by a few people that they felt that you were trying to use my opinions as a springboard. It was never at all what I was trying to do. And I told them I didn't care, and if I felt that we didn't agree, I would state my piece. The show has always been, I need y'all to hear this, right? The show has always been performative, but to act like it is reactive or stuff like SRS means that you never understood, keyword here, the marketing behind what I am doing. If you are looking for real wrestling conversation, this was never the place. The whole design of this was to feel like you were sitting at a bar. Now, second, I don't know what bars this guy has been to. I've sat at a bar a few plenty of times with grown ass men just talking about life in deep conversations. Some real stuff. I don't know what bars this guy's sitting at. Right? That's not every conversation, sure. But I've sat at a plenty of bars with people and talked about life. Right? This is about hot takes and surface level conversation. It's literally called casual. I'm growing a channel, and while I respect your opinion, I'm not in the business of competing and counterpunching in my own Discord. Like I said, you're always welcome in here to enjoy the performative part of the channel, and you can disagree while still promoting the spirit of the channel, but I'm not looking for debate inside my own community. So let's get to this. Let's understand what this means. So this is what he actually said. And after that long rant, this is what he actually said first. This was never about free speech, which confirms the point that I even told him. He confirmed a couple things that I had felt, right? What this is an echo chamber. What casual wrestling community is an echo chamber. And if your opinion goes outside of what is accepted, it's not allowed. Second thing he said, people essentially is the people in the group didn't like you because you made them think. Saying things like they didn't feel like you were a casual fan or that you competed for attention translated is you made smarter points than others, and that made people insecure. Instead of encouraging honest dialogue, he coddled the comfort zone. And this is true. I pushed people to think logically. They didn't want that. I got a lot of pushback when I posted things like that. Third thing he said is, I want followers, not equals. I'm not in the business of competing and counterpunching. This is the heart of the grift. He's not building a community. He's building an audience. If your disagreement threatens his authority or his brand, you're not welcome. That's how I feel. And then fourth, and the most important, this is all a show. And I was ruining the illusion. He admitted the entire thing is content marketing. He wants hot takes, buzzwords, memes, not deep conversation. So with that being said, I'm going to play this trip, this clip of this take. And with that understanding, I set that context up that all of this is a grift in a business to make money. I set all that up because if you understand that all he does is performative and it's not real, he doesn't believe what he actually says, which is why he can change his opinions from Roxanne Perez is awful, I don't see what's special, to her coming into the Royal Rumble and saying, oh, I understand it now. Nothing changed in that time period about Roxanne Perez. What happened was if he was exposed, he couldn't admit that NXT was good, but now she's in on the main roster. Now he can say, right, that's what I got out of it. Same thing happened with Io, right? Io Sky's not it. She's too small. She's not entertaining enough. All of a sudden, she starts doing fucking emotes that can go on Fortnite, and now she's the greatest thing ever, right? So I set the context here that everything he says is designed to make content. I made a statement on a episode earlier this year that a lot of these guys, they make content that's driven to post on TikTok, right? And if you listen to a lot of his posts, a lot of his videos in his podcast, a lot of his individual segments were worded in a way and segmented in a way that it ended with a very hot take that he would clip and then post on TikTok. Hey, that's the business model. I'm not mad at him for doing it. I'm mad really more at the system because you'll never catch me doing that. But let's understand that he doesn't believe a lot of what he says. It's all for the money. It's all for the grift. It's all to get an audience to watch his show. I'm gonna be real raw and relevant here. I've always said I'm not here to build an audience. I don't podcast for people to listen. I thank every single listener, the Wavy D's, the Caras, the B Masters, right? I've even said, you know, I've even tried to draw the line and say, I don't have favorites. I'll be honest with you. I have favorites. I do show favoritism to some of my listeners, right? That doesn't mean you can't disagree with me, but I have certain people that I respect a lot more. I'm just going to be honest. I'm going to keep it real, raw, and relevant, right? There are people who listen from day one that I fully respect, right? Starry Nights, Kara, Wavy D, B-Master, y'all are the OGs. I respect y'all for sticking with me. And what's interesting is a lot of y'all follow this guy and listen to his stuff as well. And so I'm here to educate on what's happening. So I set this context that he maybe doesn't believe what he's saying, so that when you hear this ridiculous clip that I'm going to share with you, you have to pause and wonder, is this a hot take? Because he understands that this person is really, really, really popular among the IWC, or does he really believe this? Right? Because he sets up this fake war between the casuals in the IWC that don't actually exist, because the casuals are part of the IWC. There's no war here, except for in his marketing and in his branding. Right? So I'm going to play this clip real quick. And I'm going to play the whole 6-minute clip. That way you have the context of the whole clip. And I'll pause it throughout time as we talk about this.
Valkyria is the most overrated superstar on the entire WWE roster right now. I don't want this to turn into a big verbal dump on Lyra Valkyria, because I actually think she has potential. At 28 years old, there's still work to be done, but I think she's got to drop the weird Lady Bird gimmick and find something that has a broad spectrum appeal. Because I can tell you, we have two daughters who watch wrestling from time to time, and not once have they ever said, man, I really like the Weird Bird Girl.
Yeah.
She has no appeal to youth.
They just ask, like, why does she have feathers in her hair?
Exactly.
What
it's
is
it's,
that,
it's
Dad?
Extremely confusing. She has this, like, Irish mythology lore that nobody fucking cares about.
That's what the bird's for?
Yeah, she's like the goddess of death or something like that.
Oh.
But it doesn't make sense. You're not killing anybody in wrestling. And while she's a very serviceable babyface, I think that she has all of the right parts. She needs what I call babyface swag. You need something that the little kids can get behind and they can like you. But my bigger issue is why I say she's overrated. She's been on every premium live event since WrestleMania. She has gotten 15 chances at the Women's Intercontinental Championship match. Now, place that against the idea that Montez Ford has not been on a premium live event since Elimination Chamber of 2023. Okay, outside of WrestleMania, which everybody and their fucking mom gets to be on WrestleMania. But outside that, Montez Ford can't get a spot on a premium live event. But Lyra Valkyria is on everyone that's on TV. And she's not bad. Like, the match with Becky Lynch and Bayley was a great match. But it wasn't a great match because of Lyra Valkyria. Yeah. She's a great, what I'd call, dance partner. She makes the other person very good. But there's nothing interesting. The crowd, she's not over. One thing that's confusing for a lot of people that watch wrestling is if the crowd reacts, you're over.
Yeah.
That's not the case, right? With Jey Uso, the problem is people fucking love the entrance. They'll yeet, but it's the in-ring work and on the microphone stuff that falls a little bit short with Jey Uso. Now, I think Jey Uso, top 10 in the business right now, so it's not meant to be a knock, but my point is I'm trying to make is that when Lyra Valkyria comes out and does the dun-dun-dun and the crowd goes, woo, which is, it's not as loud as it used to be, but yeah. Woo! That's not, that's not to recognize that she's over with the crowd. That just means, we hear an audio cue and we react to said audio cue and yeah. we woo.
For sure.
I mean, she's got another match at SummerSlam against Becky Lynch again.
Yeah.
At some point, Triple H has these pet projects.
I don't get it. I literally had asked you the other day, what's so special about her? Like, I don't understand. Like, where did she come from? Because I think that there's so many other people that are interesting, and I want to know more about them, you know?
Yeah, special is the perfect word, right? Because there's no hook, right? There's no catchphrase. There's no standout personality. There's no reason for casual wrestling fans to care. I bet you, if you ask the average casual wrestling fan, the casual fan, right? If you ask them to describe Lyra Valkyria, they're going to go, weird, a little bit weird, right? Why is she a bird? I know Michael Cole keeps telling us why she's a bird.
Yeah.
But why is she a bird? Why does she have wings, right? To me, her mic work is robotic.
Mm-hmm.
She tries to emulate a lot of what Becky Lynch does, and I don't think Becky Lynch lately has been great on a microphone as well. You have to make a connection with the fans. Mm-hmm. That's what they call the it factor, right? Like, LA Knight has the it factor, and people
Chelsea Green has it.
Chelsea Green has it more than anybody.
Yeah.
But the it factor, and this is what people like IWC try to get on LA Knight, and they go, he's just a combination of The Rock and Stone Cold.
So what?
But that's a great fucking mix, right? Yeah. I like bananas. I like strawberries. When you put them in a fucking blender, they make something amazing. I don't get mad at a strawberry banana smoothie because it's masquerading as strawberries and bananas, right?
Mm-hmm.
So LA Knight took the formula of taking two of the greatest of all time, mixed them together, and created a character, and most casual fans love them. Well, maybe Lyra Valkyria needs to find some of those ingredients to create an it factor, because I'm telling you, it comes off as forced. It comes off... I said it just like a pet project is what it seems like to me. It seems like Triple H is doubling down. He's decided, I'm going to get Lyra Valkyria over.
Yeah.
And the crowd's just not responding. And he goes, oh, no, you motherfuckers are going to like Lyra Valkyria. If I have to put her in 100 matches with Bayley and Becky Lynch, you guys are eventually going to like her. And my fear is the next thing he's going to try is to turn her into a bad guy. And I don't think she's going to be any better as a bad guy than she is on a good guy. It looks to me she's going to turn heel on Bayley, and that's the wrong move. I think she has potential as a babyface, right?
Yeah.
There's a certain look that people have. She's got a very innocent look. I think there is somebody likable under the bird costume.
Agree. Because I don't not like her, which I automatically know if I don't like somebody. She has potential. There's forgettable is what I say about her.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. Oatmeal.
Good.
Oatmeal comes to mind when I think of Lyra Valkyria. Right now,
Hardy.
She's plain oatmeal. And oatmeal sucks when you just eat oatmeal.
Yeah.
But she needs cinnamon. She needs a little sugar.
Yeah.
She needs strawberries. She needs that additive to the plain. The oatmeal's great. It's good for you. It's hearty. It's got everything you need. But it just, you got to sprinkle something on top of it to make it likable. And if WWE is going to try to keep making her the next big thing, they're going to have to find her a personality. They're going to have to find her, you know, mic skills.
Yeah.
They're going to have to find her something that makes her likable, especially in, I think she has the ability to be likable by kids, but it's not being Big Bird.
No.
Can't be Big Bird.
No.
Big Bird's not going to sell.
All right. So let's talk about. So first off, this is absolutely insane, just on premise, that he's complaining about Lyra versus Becky happening when at the beginning of the year, I promoted that this feud to happen at Mania, and he was all on board for it. Right? So this isn't just him who has... This opinion on Lyra. I see it all over the place, mostly from the casuals, but I see it all over the place. And you see things. I mean, the IWC is now sort of jumping on Lyra as well. But you're seeing things. You know, you'll hear things like, "Oh, she thinks she's a bird. She's not for the kids. I just don't get her. She's a little weird," right? I don't understand how hard it is to understand what Lyra Valkyria's gimmick is. Now, I will admit, I think it would be better as a heel. You just heard him say he doesn't want that. I think the gimmick she's playing would be better if she was a bad guy. I will explain that at the end. What more is there to get? This is what I think happens. A lot of these people who don't understand Lyra Valkyria's gimmick, it's because, I'm going to be honest, they're a little bit ignorant to cultural gimmicks. Lyra Valkyria is inspired by the Morrigan from Irish mythology. This is the goddess of war, the goddess of fate, and the goddess of death. There's war, fate, and death, right? Often represented by a crow or a raven. The Morrigan isn't just a bird. It's a shape-shifting goddess tied to the chaos of battle. Lyra is channeling that. Her entrance, her moves, her in-ring gear. Right? If she became a heel, she could stare into the soul of her opponents. Right? I can even imagine like having like a how AEW did with Tekla and having like the spider crawl on the screen. If you had like a raven randomly disappear on the screen, or have her randomly sitting in like, quite honest, I don't know if you guys know what the crow's nest is in a building, but it's like the very top of the ceiling where they hang all the banners and stuff from. Have her like standing in the crow's nest, like staring down at all the women's matches or women. She's sort of like, you know, staring into their soul and stuff, like some creepy like type stuff. That would be a fun gimmick. Be a fun gimmick if she was a heel. Because that's storytelling and there's character work there, right? But what happens is a lot of these people are a little bit behind on the times and they just want cookie cutter baby face, cookie cutter heel, good versus evil. We can't have nuance in our characters. Apparently fans are too dumb for nuance, right? I don't understand what's so hard to understand about. Right? Like, what do you want more from the character, right? No one questioned why Undertaker walked around summoning lightning. Right? Oh, she's not for the kids. Why does every gimmick have to be for the kids? You're not putting her on the cereal box for 6-year-olds. I don't get that. The complaint that she's too weird, as if Goldust and Mankind, the original Kane, the Boogeyman, as if these weren't weird gimmicks. That kind of thrived. Just say you want cookie cutter number 27. The complaint about her promo ability, is it the greatest? No, I will admit it. I don't understand. This quite literally might be the dumbest take I've ever heard on a podcast. That Lyra Valkyria is overrated. Let's just talk about it. Lyra Valkyria in a ring is top three in the business. In the women's division, any company, anywhere in the world, she's top three. She is consistent. She never has a bad match. The complaint that, oh, she's always in matches. That's kind of the point. Oh, man, she gets more matches on PLEs than Montez Ford. Well, Montez Ford has done nothing to separate himself from the rest of the tag division. Is Montez Ford great? Absolutely. But he's not a single superstar. And there's obviously this disconnect between WWE and tag team wrestling. And it's always been that. For as long as I was a fan, I have been a fan. Montez doesn't want to separate from Dawkins. He wants to stay as a tag team. You can't blame WWE for that. But Lyra is someone they are building, and they are building a feud, and the feud goes from Mania to SummerSlam. And then you build into her next feud, and then her next feud, because she is young, she's talented, she's who they want to help build the next generation of the women's division around. I don't see what is that, right? Oh, but so you understand the Morrigan, and you think that's a good gimmick, but Undertaker, you think that? No, I've never said Undertaker's gimmick was bad. The gimmick was wonderful. Undertaker as a performer was fantastic. I thought the gimmick was too supernatural, which is why I didn't click with it. I'm not a big fan of supernatural gimmicks, but the Morrigan isn't supernatural. It's not spooky, and that's what I mean. I'm not a big fan of like spooky gimmicks. The Morrigan's not spooky. I don't understand the need to critique Lyra Valkyria. She's probably the sixth or seventh best woman on the WWE roster right now. And they're going to build around her. They're going to build around her. So there's that. We'll move on. We want to talk about Bryan Danielson saying that the WrestleMania 30 match is no longer important to him, which is just a little bit disrespectful, a little bit ungrateful. That's literally the match that put you on the map to be a mainstream superstar. And is not important to you? Come on, big dog. His wife, Brie, states that she can't go back to WWE because she thinks Danielson working for AEW is a problem. It's not a problem. I can probably tell you it's not a problem because Meechan's husband, Keith Lee, works for AEW. Rhea's a big star getting pushed, right? Her husband, Buddy Matthews, works for AEW. I highly doubt that the reason Brie hasn't got a call back to come back is because Bryan Danielson works for WWE. And the last thing in the opening thoughts, before we dive into predicting SummerSlam, is I'm going to do a segment every week called Fantasy Booking Friday. And I made this faction called Dominion. And it's a female faction made up of Stephanie Vaquer, Tatum Paxley, Lyra Valkyria, Jade Cargill, and Liv Morgan. So, Dominion is a group born out of rebellion. Each woman in the group has been underestimated, overlooked, or cast into a role that never truly matched their power. They realize that the wrestling world rewards conformity and panders to the masses. But true greatness comes from dominance, from taking control, not waiting for your opportunity. Lyra Valkyria is the mystic aura and warlike mentality and is the heartbeat of the group. Her connection to myth and warrior spirit gives the faction almost legendary aura, as if they are destined to take what they deserve. She found allies who shared her disdain for the system, women who refused to be molded by anyone else's image. Jade Cargill is the powerhouse who is tired of being treated like another attraction. Her raw power becomes the weapon for Dominion. Liv Morgan was once considered an outlier, a wild card that the world labeled too unpredictable or not serious enough. Dominion embraced her, transforming her chaos into calculated destruction. She's the group's mind game specialist, the one who gets under everyone's skin before the fight begins. Tatum Paxley is the youngest and the most eager member, was dismissed as just another rookie. Dominion became her proving ground, molded her, shaped her instinct, and turned her to a relentless hunter. Stephanie Vaquera is the technical wrestling and unapologetic edge that gave Dominion its backbone, that represents precision, ruthlessness. She's the enforcer who makes sure the dominance isn't just talk. And then I built a storyline for them, right? That they form a faction. They're overtaking the women's division, ultimately leading them to face off against the baby faces, you know, someone like Julia, Kairi, Asuka, Io, possibly Rhea, right? And having a war games match. And so you build like a, I would build a like 9 month long feud from Rumble to Survivor Series that just sort of ends. And we could, we, right. And so we're going to do things like that. And what we call Fantasy Book Friday, you can give me ideas, you know, storylines you want me to book. And stuff like that, right? So let's go into our SummerSlam predictions. Pull up the card here. All right, so let's start with CM Punk versus Gunther. Yeah, I think this is. I think Gunther's winning. I think Gunther is winning without a shadow of a doubt. I think Braun Breaker or Bronson Reed could be involved. They are fighting the same night, so that's interesting to figure out, you know, how that happens. I think this match, I think Gunther versus Punk is in the middle of the show, and Bronson Reed and Braun Breaker and then will end the in the night. So this could have effects that way. If CM Punk gets screwed by Braun and Bronson, you know, maybe CM Punk comes back and screws them in their match. Who knows, right? But I am picking Gunther. I think Gunther does win. That then turns into Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez defending against Alexa Bliss and Charlotte Flair. I'm going against what most people are saying here. I'm going Raquel and Roxanne to retain the titles. If a women's championship match, Tiffany Stratton versus Jade Cargill. It is now the time of Jade. It is the era of Jade. Cargill will win the women's championship. I think which will immediately set up a Bianca Belair return as she attacks Jade Cargill. We then have Jelly Roll and Randy Orton teaming against Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul. I think this one is easy. Randy Orton and Jelly Roll for the victory. Roman and Jay versus Braun and Bronson. I'm going Braun and Bronson here. I think they're really going to establish these guys as dominant. Braun and Bronson. That's my pick. Karrion Kross versus Sami Zayn. I picked Karrion last time they fought, and I was wrong. The contract apparently ends at the end of the month or sometime in August. I don't think they're re-signing. I think Sami Zayn gets the victory. The next night, we have John Cena versus Cody Rhodes in an undisputed street fight. I think Cody Rhodes wins. The street fight gimmick gives this away to me. I think he wins. I think he finally sells his soul. We're seeing segments of both him turning heel and Cena turning face again. I think The Rock double crosses John Cena. I think Cody finally sold his soul to The Rock. I think that's how we're going to clean this up. I think Cody's turning heel, and Cena's going to go back to being a babyface to finish out the last 4 months of his WWE career. And Cody Rhodes will be champion. He will be The Rock's champion. And however we move on from that, I'm sure we'll figure that out. Naomi versus Rhea Ripley versus Io Sky. As we are driving into Paris, the winner of this match faces Stephanie Vaquer in Paris. I do believe that's going to be a part in the factor. We also have to realize in October, the next PLE after SummerSlam will be, or excuse me, the next PLE will be Paris, the one after Paris at the end of August. In a month's time, we have Clash in Paris. The PLE after Paris isn't until October, the middle of October. Crown Jewel Perth, which is where Rhea Ripley is, you know, that's her hometown or her home country. I think Rhea Ripley is going to win this. I think we're going to get Rhea versus Stephanie Vaquer. That's a big match for the Paris crowd to get behind. And I ultimately think something's going to happen, which will lead to another Stephanie versus Rhea match in Perth. Not exactly sure. We'll let that play out. We have an IC title match, Dom and AJ Styles. I'm picking Dominic Mysterio. A women's IQ no de qualification match. No countouts match. There must be a winner. Basically, Becky Lynch versus Lyra. If Lyra loses, Lyra can never challenge for the title again. Lyra Valkyrie is winning this match. I know everyone thought that Lyra was turning on Bayley, and I think that might still be the play, but I think Lyra's going to turn on Bayley as champion, 100%. We then have a steel cage match, Jacob Fatu versus the champion Solo Sikoa for the U.S. title. This is obvious. Solo is going to retain. Solo's winning. Jacob Fatu is then going to get pushed. They're pushing him. They just released like six shirts from him. He's going to be the next major challenger for the world title, I believe. And then we have also the final, the 12th match, a six-man tag team championship TLC match between champions of the Wyatt Six versus Andrade and Rey Fénix versus DIY versus Fraxium versus Motor City Machine Gun versus the Street Profits. And I am picking Fraxium to win this match. I don't have a reason. I just like Fraxium. This is probably going to be the worst match of the night, to be honest with you, or of the weekend. So, that is my SummerSlam predictions. We will move now towards questions in the Discord. Which we have. Who do you think is and was the best champion from each division in WWE? Oh, boy. I don't know necessarily what he means by every division. I'm just going to go male and female because that's easiest. No, I'm kidding. Let's start with the world heavyweight champion. I don't see. This is the thing is there's way too many people to even consider. I don't know who's won what champion. I'm going to be honest with you. I respect the question. I just don't necessarily think it. I don't have an answer for this question because I don't have the knowledge of was this guy this champion or whatever, right? So I'm gonna pass on that one, right? He then asked, when Bianca comes back, who would you want her to go into? I think this is painfully clear. She's coming back this weekend against to set up a feud with Jade. I think we'll get Bianca and Jade heading into Survivor Series, and I think we'll end up with Jade versus Charlotte heading into Mania. Last one, but you got a marry, date, or ghost between Lyra, Bianca, and Rhea. Well, we'll go ahead and give ghost to Rhea. We're gonna marry Lyra Valkyria, and we're gonna date Bianca Belair. And then we'll turn into our bracket battles for this week. So I'll mention this. We're going to do two different things. So on Tuesday, we're going to bring back like Thirsty Tuesday on Tuesdays, and that'll be its own separate bracket. And then on Fridays, it will be like the wrestling bracket. And this bracket, we just finished best theme songs. The next bracket is going to be, I created this bracket a while ago. So I got to find it again. Okay. It's going to be our best women's wrestler from AEW, AEW, and TNA, 64 of the best women. So we got two brackets of 32. We'll do these brackets now. So we'll save these real quick. So that way I can keep them and not have to search for them again. So today's matchups will be, as we start this off, will be Penelope Ford from AEW against Mercedes Moné. Sol Ruka versus Jamie Hayter. Julia Hart versus Tatum Paxley. And Red Velvet against Tay Mello. Or Ty Mello. So those are this week's bracket. So I'm going to give my answers. Mercedes is better than Penelope Ford. That one's an easy one. Sol Ruka is over Jamie Hayter to me. Tatum Paxley, to me, as a character, is more fleshed out. I think she's really good in the ring, so she's over Julia Hart. And then I would put Red Velvet over Ty Mello. And I love both Red Velvet and Ty Mello. But there is our bracket battle. So we'll end with our question, or excuse me, our final thoughts. And it's another new segment, which will be the question of the week. I will post this on Monday every week, and we'll discuss them on Friday. So I have last week's question and this week's question to discuss. The last week's question was, who has been the best wrestler of 2025 so far? My answer to that is Gunther. He's been the most consistent. He's never had a bad match. His promos have been good. In a year where wrestling has really been down, Gunther has been a really, really bright spot in 2025. This week's question was, who is on your wrestling Mount Rushmore? I do have answers for this. And I also have reasons for certain wrestlers who are not on my Mount Rushmore. So my wrestlers that are on my Mount Rushmore are Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Roman Reigns, Triple H. Hulk Hogan has to be on your Mount Rushmore, right? He has to be. Bully Ray said it correctly. He is not on Mount Rushmore. He is Mount Rushmore. Any list that does not include Hulk Hogan is wrong. Hulk Hogan is wrestling. It's the reason it went from smoky armories to national television, having action figures, lunchboxes, and Saturday morning cartoons, right? But not only did he run it from the 80s into the early 90s, he then revolutionized the game again in the 90s with joining the NWO and had a second run that changed the business forever. Hulk Hogan has to be on your Mount Rushmore. Ric Flair probably should be on your Mount Rushmore as well. He was a character of all characters. Flair made wrestling an art form. He probably is the best heel of all time. I think you have to keep him there. Triple H is a little bit awkward of a pick. Most people don't pick him. But I think he's one of the best storytellers in that have ever been in wrestling. But I also think you have to consider his post-in-ring career and how he's revolutionize wrestling that way. And then Roman Reigns, he's the modern Hulk Hogan. He's the start of the resurgence of wrestling into the mainstream again. I think Roman Reigns, with his 1,000-plus day title run, with everything he's done for wrestling in the last 4 to 5 years, plus this longevity that he's had in his career, I think Roman Reigns has to be on Mount Rushmore, at least to me. Now, I know there are guys that people are like, well, what about Austin? What about Rock? What about Cena? What about Taker, right? Well, let's start with Rock and Stone Cold. I think these are the easiest for me to dismiss. I respect them. They're icons. But we're talking about Mount Rushmore here. Mount Rushmore is legacy, longevity, range of influence. And I personally don't think Rock and Austin were around long enough at their peak in those gimmicks. What, 4 or 5 years and that was it? I don't think there's a longevity there that gets you on Mount Rushmore. Right? John Cena. This was probably the closest one to taking off Triple H. So to me, it's 1 Hogan, 2 Flair, 3 Roman, and then Triple H is 4, and Cena's a close number 5. The problem is I'm a character guy, and I don't feel Cena has a range of character work to balance off of, right? He didn't evolve enough. He was that same corny character that just never hit me in the way that I felt Triple H's mind games worked, right? Or how Roman's transformation from the big dog, this is my yard, to, you know, Roman's story over really a 10-year period of his career is one of the best stories told in wrestling, right? Cena always felt safe, right? I just don't think that there's enough character work, right? Someone like Undertaker, right? He passes the character work, he passes the longevity, but another thing that I look for, another criteria is, were you ever the guy? And Taker was never the guy. He was definitely the heart of the locker room, but that doesn't get you on Mount Rushmore. Taker, if to put this in a basketball analogy, Taker would win 6th man of the year every year. You're the heart of the locker room. You're probably the hardest working. When you get on the court, you work hard, you're good, you help the team, but you're not the guy. You're not the MVP, right? And so there's that answer. I know some people include people like Shawn Michaels. Again, I just don't think that he carried the business. He wrestled at a time where he was never again the main guy. Great performer. I feel the same way about Bret Hart. Bret Hart, I don't think was ever truly carrying the business for a long period of time. Bruno, I've heard on list. I don't see Bruno as a Mount Rushmore guy. I think there's a lot of people who've done a lot more for the business than Bruno did. Macho Man, again, he's overshadowed because he was never the guy. Sting, I've heard a lot of people say Sting because he was essentially, but here's my thing with Sting, right? Sting is WCW's Undertaker, not just because of the darker gimmick, but he was the 6th man of the year. He was never truly the guy. He was never truly the guy, right? I've heard Dusty, again, just not the face of the company, right? And so, yeah, there's my Mount Rushmore. And that's how we'll end this episode. I want to appreciate everyone. Again, I want to have a podcast that's educational, that we can have deep conversations. You know, me, James, and Kara went back and forth for like an hour last night discussing some awesome stuff. That's what I want, right? I'm not here for money. I'm not here for to grift or to sell you anything. I just want a community where we could talk wrestling. And then I do that as well and give my opinions on a podcast form. With that being said, though, I appreciate y'all who listened to this. And I hope it turned out well enough for you all. Leave a review. Let me know what you guys think. And I will see you on Tuesday. We're back to Tuesdays and Fridays now, starting next week. So I will see you on Tuesday with the next episode.
So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEWWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay. Slapping meat wrestling every Tuesday.